Everybody, my name is Glenn Hill.
I'm Jacob Meyer.
Welcome to the Tactical Tennis Podcast, and in today's episode we're doing something a little bit different in that we are going to take a single player and talk just about them essentially for the entire episode and break them down, talk about their strengths and weaknesses, some of their tactics and strategies, and also make some projections into the future about what we see coming up for them over the next year.
So the idea here is we're just going to talk about one guy, his game, and you know, if you know him, then you can write us and let us know what you think, see if we missed anything. And if you don't know him, hopefully this will be a good way for you to understand who you're looking at when he pops up, because he's going to be on your radar sooner rather than later.
Absolutely. The guard is changing. There's no doubt about that. So the topic of today's episode, if you've seen the title of the podcast for today, is pretty obvious, and it's Dominic Thiem. And I think Thiem's an interesting person to talk about because to me there's elements where he's very much a throwback player to the older days, if we go back 20, 30 years, when we had really surface specialists. And we're going to get more into that in a moment, but Thiem has come up the rankings very solidly over the last few years. He's what, 24 years old now? He ended 2015 ranked number 20, 2016 ranked number 8. This year he's year-end number 5, although he was number 4 very briefly in November for a week or so.
Right. So yeah. Most people know him now as a top 10 player, but he was really under the radar for a guy that's that good 3 and 4 years ago when he was cracking into the top 20.
Right, and then he's just had a very steady and consistent climb since then. He's racked up 8 career titles, and have all happened over the last 3 years. 6 of them are on clay, 1 on hard, and wait for it, 1 grass court.
Yeah, that'll surprise a lot of people. Surprised me the first time I heard it, and then I remembered, oh yeah, I remember watching him win that grass court title and thinking, huh, this might be the first one for a while.
Wonders of the last one for a while, I think you meant. But yeah, wonders from the seas. You know, and to me, Thiem is at this point, like at this moment in time, the second best clay court player in the world. And I know a lot of people are going to hear that and say, wait, stop the presses. You're a crazy person. And I do want to qualify this and say that obviously Nadal is the best clay court player in the world, and there's no question about that. But I think a healthy Djokovic would probably slot in between Thiem and Nadal.
So a couple years ago, Djokovic would have been the number 2 clay court player, but that was a couple years ago. Federer would have slotted in there too.
Once upon a time, yeah.
It's been a while.
But it has been a while. But, you know, point being that, with things of the way they stand right now, with everybody's current health situations, Thiem is undoubtedly the second best clay court player in the world. He went 24-5 on clay this year versus 25-22 on all of the surfaces. You know, that's why I refer to him as a little bit of a throwback player in terms of his specialization on surface, because we don't see a lot of that these days. Most of the players that are breaking into the top 20, 30 in the world are able to be strong on most of the surface. They get fairly consistent results. We don't see dramatically changing records as they jump from surface to surface. But he's not the only one in the top 10 right now that we can say that about. But that's probably a topic for another time. So let's talk about the style of play that Thiem is. So how would you describe him briefly?
Yeah, so as a style player, I would actually go directly to what you were just talking about, in the sense that not only is he a surface specialist, but his game doesn't translate as well to the other surfaces. And to me, it's because of the style of game that he plays, and it's specifically because he is a throwback clay court specialist with some modern additions. So he's trying to hit every ball as hard and as spinny with as much topspin as he can, and he's doing that off of both sides. So he stands really far back, and he's hitting the ball really high over the net relative to anybody else in the top of the game. And, I mean, he's just trying to beat you with what we would traditionally think of as a heavy ball. He's really a stand back and rip it kind of guy.
Right.
That's how I think of him.
Absolutely. I mean, if I had to describe him in one sentence, he's a big hitting, deep playing baseliner. And that's exactly it. He's got to stand back. We're talking 2 to 4 meters behind the baseline on his average ground stroke, and he's going to hit the absolute cover off the ball. And yeah. that's where his game is at. So if we talk about, you know, his assets as a player, I mean, I think his topspin forehand and topspin backhand are among the best out on the tour right now in terms of velocity and spin, velocity and rotation. I mean, he hits basically bigger than almost anybody. When we take both wings into account and we look at average ground stroke speeds,
his average ground stroke speed is going to be way high up there. Yeah. I mean, he's not hitting. The thing is, I agree with you because I think he hits bigger. Like, he intimidates players more than maybe anybody right now, which is a weird thing to say. But I mean, guys that haven't played team are afraid to play team. And that's not true for other guys in the top 10.
Right. I mean, so like just a quick like little stat on this note. When he played Nadal earlier this year in Paris, the match that he won against Nadal, his average ground stroke speed was 124 kilometers an hour to Nadal's 118. So, I mean, yeah. I should say significantly, but he's definitely out hitting Nadal on the clay. Like, he's playing bigger off both wings.
It's significant to me when you're hitting a few miles an hour harder than Nadal.
Yeah, I mean, he's
there's not that much. I mean, they're hitting the ball so big, there's not that much faster that you can go.
No, I mean, look, Tim's average forehand speed in that match is 134 kilometers an hour to Nadal's 121.
Yeah.
And he's hitting a ball that's, like, comparably heavy to Nadal. That's an important thing to note. Like, he's not – this isn't like a Del Potro forehand where he's hitting the ball that hard, but it's really flat. I mean, he's crushing it. That's a ball that's heavy and fast.
And that's the thing. That's why I agree with you in that he's hitting so big, is because it's high velocity and it's high spin rate. And that's what he does more than anybody else. There are other guys that are hitting higher velocity. I don't know that anybody's actually hitting the ball with a higher spin rate. Maybe like Jack Sock on his forehand, but then when you put the backhand into the mix.
Right, yeah, it's not so much. So what else would you consider to be among his assets as a player?
I think of his main asset as being a supremely balanced player in the sense that he doesn't have an obvious hole.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that stands out would be his net game, but he's not coming in there. So he's like, you don't ever get to see his net game.
Right.
But, you know, you can't just attack his backhand. You can't just attack his forehand corner. His service motion is very good. It's very solid. I think he can become a much smarter server down the road. I don't think he uses his serve nearly as well as he can. But it's basically when you see him on the other side of the net, there's no place to go to get free points. There's nothing obvious to do. And then when you combine that supreme balance with the fact that he's launching himself at every ball, I mean, like old school Andy Roddick launching himself into the ball kind of style. It's intimidating. He's an intimidating player, and his big asset is you feel like this guy's going to bulldoze you over.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I would add his lateral movement in as an asset. Like, I think that he moves side to side very well. He does a very good job of that. And I also just really quickly, I want to just point out, I was wrong. When he played Nadal, it was in Rome, not Paris. Important distinction. They are, they're slightly different. They're not even in the same country. So, anyways, his lateral movement is very good. But really, I mean, his forehand, his back, his lateral movements are the things that where I look at him play and I think these are his weapons. These are the things that I put in the plus column. But when I look over to the liabilities column, we start looking at why he's a clay court specialist. This is why. I think his volleys are not a strength. I think they're a weakness. I think his vertical movement, like his movement forward, is quite poor.
Well, I think that depends on how we talk about it. On clay, he's more than capable of running down a drop shot.
No, but he doesn't
know how to move back and forth vertically. So he doesn't do the north and south movement, right?
Right.
He really wants to move side to side, and that's it. That's where he's capable.
Yeah, I mean, but to me, like, the difference is this. Like, sure, he can run down a drop shot well because he reads the game pretty well. He's fast. I mean, he's an athletic guy. But that's somebody's making him do that. Like, he doesn't move vertically well of his own volition. He's not doing a good job moving forward to take time away from opponents to cut balls off, to close, get up inside the court and be aggressive. I think his slice backhand falls into the liability column for me. It's not terrible, but it's not a great shot.
That's interesting that you put that there. I actually think his slice backhand's pretty good. I honestly think he just doesn't use it very well. It's a little bit like his second serve. I don't think his second serve is bad. I think he makes really bad choices with it.
Yeah, well, that to me, like, that's why I put it as a liability, because if it doesn't matter if you have something that could be good, but you use it poorly, and it's still a liability. And that's, I have his serve both first and second in there. I think he has actually a nice clean motion when it comes to his service motion. I think it's a pretty good motion, but he's just not using it very well.
Yeah,
He's a
he's really
decently tall.
not.
He's 6'1".
He's not a small guy. He's a
No.
strong guy.
Strong, and he's reasonably tall. I mean, at 6'1", you can genuinely be an offensive server and still, I mean, look at Federer's 6'1", and look at what Federer does with the ball on his serve. Like, at 6'1", you can be a genuinely offensive server without having a really low first serve percentage. Some of these guys that are shorter, if they go more aggressive on the serve, like, their percentages are going to drop. But at 6'1", like, you can be more aggressive, but he just isn't really that aggressive a server. He's almost got that Nadal mentality on the first serve of, I'm just going to get this first. I just want to start the point almost, He's a little above that. He's better than that, I think. He's more aggressive than that. That's why I say he's almost got that mentality.
Well, I think, it's funny. Rafa used to have that mentality all the time. I mean, he won a lot of French Opens that way. Now I think Rafa is serving more aggressively, but
Yeah.
Thiem on his first serve serves more aggressively than what Rafa used to do.
Yes.
But on his second serve, he's very much still right in that mentality of spin it in, get the point started.
Right. And I mean, he does serve his first bigger than Rafa. Like, he's a good, 10 kilometers, like 6 miles an hour faster than Rafa on the first serve on average. Right. That I mean, that's his average numbers. But the thing to me is, like, when he played Rafa in Rome, I mean, they basically are getting the same number of first serves back in play. He's having 22% unreturned to Rafa's 23% unreturned. So he's not, like, at least in that match, he's not getting a lot of free points on that serve. That to me is a little worrying. Like, that makes me not put it in the plus column, because he really should be getting more.
His first serve is sort of a neutral thing for me. His second serve is definitely a liability. The way that he uses it, just not good enough.
No.
And to some degree, if your first serve is not an asset, then it probably belongs in the liability column.
That's what I would think too. So when you tell me he doesn't use his second serve very well, talk to me a little bit about what you see that makes you say that.
Well, I see what I'm going to call a lack of purpose and vision. It really is as if he's trying first not to lose the point. It really feels like he's still thinking, like, okay, like if I hit another first serve, I'm gonna double fault. Okay, where that puts him in a space where he's thinking, okay, like I have to hit a serve that, I know I'm not gonna miss, as opposed to thinking, how do I win this point?
Right.
And so he hits the second serve with a lot of spin, and most of the time the placement's really not very good. The
That,
only
yeah.
only
See?
time I really see him place the ball well is if he hits kickers out wide on the ad side of the court, and that's almost always on the clay, which is great. But I mean, he just could be a lot more aggressive with it. Like when you watch him serve, the guy's got a good motion. He gets really good action on the ball. There's really no reason beyond his own mind that he can't be more aggressive with the second serves without double faulting.
Right, that's it. So, like, I disagree with you a little bit on the mentality. I don't think that he's worried as much as he just, to me, is not a great spot server. Like, he's not really hitting. I don't think, this is the thing to me, let me back up here a second. I don't feel, and this actually speaks to a bigger picture problem with his game, is he's not hitting his second serves with a plan.
Right.
Like, it's not a part of a cohesive game plan. And that, to me, when we step past this whole assets and liabilities idea into what his key patterns and strategies are, this is where he really struggles. To me, this is the single biggest reason why he's not doing well on surfaces other than clay. Because his strategy revolves around essentially beating his opponents into submission with spin and pace.
There's a way. This is the way that I think of this. I actually think that what he wants to do is hit three or four balls before he starts to actually do anything in the point.
Right. That makes sense to me, and I think that's a reasonably fair assessment. Like, yeah, he's just basically getting the rally started. And
yeah. And like, he almost wants to, like, get a groove. Like, oh, I'm going to feel good, and then now I'm going to start to open up the court. Now I'm going to move things around. Like,
right.
It's not like he doesn't know how to do some of these things. But
sure.
When you look at his matches and you go to the film and you break things down, you're finding time and time again, like, this guy's not winning nearly enough points with, like, a serve plus one pattern.
Oh,
like,
no.
He's just not doing it.
No, and then the same thing on the return. So, like, if you look at his return statistics – you know, I mean, I put his return in under the liabilities as well. Interestingly, so, like, when we look at Hawkeye data from his match with Dimitrov at the World Tour Finals, okay?
Well, that's not even to be fair.
Well, it's – no, but it is representative to me, because what we look at here is we've got a match that went three sets. It was a fairly tight affair. And when we look at where they made contact with the ball on the second serve return, Dimitrov literally didn't make contact with a single – return behind the baseline on second serves for the entire match.
Right.
Had a handful that are about 1 meter. Almost all of his second serve returns are between 1 and 2 meters inside the baseline. That's, you know, 3 to 6 feet inside the baseline as a contact point for his second serve return, for those of you not doing metric. Whereas,
and that's probably all you need to know about team's second serve.
No, but that's Dimitrov, where Dimitrov's standing. No, but Dimitrov's doing that for everybody. That's not, to me, a reflection on his serve, okay? That's important. But here's the critical thing to me is, on the return, TM, on the second serve on indoor hard court, he's making contact on average between 4 and 6 meters behind the baseline to return second serves.
TM's actually backing up.
He's backing up significantly. He returns his first serve basically in the space 0 to 1.5 meters behind the baseline, and then he backs up to 4 to 6. So we're talking 12 to 18 feet behind the baseline for second serve returns, and 0 to 4 feet, 5 feet behind the baseline for first serve returns. So he's backing up significantly. And look, he's absolutely ripping the ball. Like, his average second serve return speed is 77 miles an hour in this match.
Yeah, it's huge.
That's the return. That's huge. But he's doing it from so far back that he's not actually hurting anybody. And so returns go into the liability column. And then, you know, when we look at the strategies again, I mean, it just comes down to the plan isn't even really a plan to me. Like, this is just an idea of, I'm going to hit huge, and I'm going to keep hitting huge until you make a mistake. There's no finishing idea. Like, there's not a sequence of events. Like, if we take any of the top guys that have, you know, been around for a while and have had sustained success, you know, any of the big four, you know, like, you look at Federer, you look at Nadal, you look at Djokovic, you look at Wawrinka. Like, these guys, they're building a point. They're playing chess, and to me, TM is playing checkers.
I don't even think he's competitive checkers.
There's no sophistication to his game. Like, there's not, I'm going to hit, yeah, I'm not going to hit a backhand here to get a forehand there. I'm going to play 2-3 balls here and then take it inside in, get the short ball, come forward, finish at the net. Like, there's no finish in his head when he plays points that I can see. There's no end game, right? It's just, I'm going to hit until somebody screws up. And that's a big problem. And so when he goes from surface to surface, he's returning 4 or 5 meters behind the baseline for second serves, no matter what surface he's on. He's playing the vast majority, and this is the other interesting thing to me, when we look at where he's playing ground strokes during the points, like during the rallies, he plays almost 48%, I mean almost 50%. I mean, it varies a little bit match to match, right? He plays somewhere in the 40 to 50% of his shots more than 2 meters behind the baseline. And less than 20%, and this is a very consistent statistic, somewhere between 13 and 19% of his ground strokes are played, or his balls are made contact inside the baseline. That's very, very little, right? Mm. That's not a lot. That's, I mean, it's certainly nowhere near enough. And so this is why he's struggling to transition from surface to surface.
Because the guys on the tour are just too good for you to hurt them from 2-3 meters behind the baseline. You're not finishing points back there.
No, you're absolutely not finishing points back there. There's no way that you're finishing points back there. And if you're not, and this is the thing, is to me, it speaks of the fact that Thiem is not making tactical adjustments. He doesn't change his game plan from one surface to the next. He doesn't really change his game plan from one opponent to the next. The only nod that he really makes in terms of adjusting to opponents is that he will change slightly where he's serving. So like if he plays a lefty like Rafa, he'll serve to get to the backhand more. And that's really about it.
That's hardly even something that we would consider a tactical adjustment. I mean, that's like...
Right. I mean, that's, yeah. That's,
any high school kids are going to do that also. So,
absolutely, absolutely. You know, and so when we look at, like, to me, a guy who is somewhat, you know, like, if we take, like, Goffin, for example, and we look at the World Tour Finals, like, Goffin's playing 35% of his shots inside the baseline to TM's, you know, 16%. And Goffin's playing 19% of his shots from 2 meters or more behind to TM's almost 50%. You know,
and to be fair, Goffin is a clay quarter.
Yeah, Goffin is
not
very
like Goffin
much...
is a guy who... you know, comes into the net and wants to be forward. Like,
Goffin is absolutely a baseline player. He's a baseline player. And the fact that he is positioning is significantly more forward is, I think, speaks a ton about the difference in mentality, because Goffin will make these adjustments. If you put Goffin, those numbers I just gave you were from indoor hard court. If you put him on the clay, he is going to be a little bit more further back for his average contact point, you know, but it's, he's making these shifts.
So this is the way that I see Thiem as a real throwback, is that in my mind, there was a whole culture of clay quarters, not all clay quarters, but there was a culture within the clay court specialists of guys who weren't trying to win the point. They were literally waiting for you to miss.
Right.
Like, I'm gonna hit a ball hard, maybe I'll throw in a slice, I'll move it around, but basically I'm just gonna putz the ball around, move it around, and wait for you to miss. And to me, that's exactly how Thiem plays. He just does it hitting the ball bigger than anybody's ever been able to do that before.
Well, I think the shift to me is he wants to make you miss. But the problem is, I think he wants to make you miss by the sheer weight of his shot, not, you know, like, he doesn't have a plan to make you miss that goes beyond the power and spin of my shot. Like, that's essentially the plan. And like we say, I mean, like, the level of sophistication that's not there is not enough once you get him off the clay. Because once you get him off the clay, you know, there's some of these holes in his game that you can take advantage of, and you can take the ball earlier of the hard court and really outposition him in a way that it's much more difficult to do off the clay. And one of the other things I think I want to talk about briefly is, mentally, to me, I see TM get negative on himself sometimes. He kind of goes away a little bit in matches. This isn't a consistent thing where he's doing it all the time, and it's nothing what I would call like a chronic problem, but it is there.
Well, I think it's consistent in the sense that if you can expose him, he gets frustrated. Like,
yes.
if he can't play his game, then it's not just that he gets frustrated, because everyone gets frustrated. That doesn't matter if you're Roger Federer or Rafa, or, you know, if you're driving in your car listening to the podcast. Like, we're all going to get frustrated if we can't do the things that we want to do on the tennis court. But Thiem gets negative. And
yeah,
there were matches where he could turn it around but he doesn't.
Doesn't, right, because he gets in that mental space, and he hasn't figured out the ways in which to either prevent himself from getting that far down in the first place, or once he does start to get there, to turn it around and change his mentality. And ironically, you know, like that's when we did the podcast on using rituals in tennis. That's one of these things I think TM could benefit from, is putting some structure in place for himself during matches to help him kind of recover when things start to go bad.
Yeah, I mean, I think that TM could benefit not just from his own rituals, but he seems like he's a almost mechanical player in the sense that he could have just a checklist. I mean, he probably only needs 5 or 6 patterns to play.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I'm not sure he even needs 5 or 6. I think with the weight of his ball and just his athleticism, I think 3 good patterns would totally change his level of play.
Yeah.
I think 3 good patterns to allow him to be more effective on hard court, and it would totally change what he's doing out there.
But what really stands out to me here is we're talking about a guy saying, okay, he can have mental letdowns when we assess, you know, his mindset and his approach to the game. He doesn't play with strategic and tactical patterns. He doesn't have a coherent philosophy about what he's trying to do out there.
Oh, I think I think he has a coherent philosophy. I don't think he has the specifics. Like he doesn't have the details worked out. The philosophy's there.
It's coherent in as much as he consistently wants to beat you into submission.
Right.
To me, I'm just saying that that's not a coherent philosophy because it doesn't have any details.
Right. And
that's not a good way to say it. Okay. So I misspoke. I shouldn't phrase it that way. But he's a simple player. Like he's a simple player.
Sure.
He doesn't have a plan B and a plan C. He doesn't have highly developed patterns. He doesn't make tactical adjustments. He has mental letdowns. He has these liabilities that we went through. He's got a couple of assets that are very good assets.
Oh, absolutely.
And yet here we are. We're talking about him. He finished number 5 in the world. He's the second best clay courter in the world for the last 2 years at least. This is a guy who's won like 40 or 50 matches for the last 4 or 5 years, going back to 2012, every year. What do you see moving forward for him?
So this is the thing to me. I think he's going to be a consistent top 10 guy, and he's going to be a consistent top 10 guy for a long time to come, like at least the next 3 to 5 years. The problem to me is I don't think he's any sort of a threat at any of the slams outside of Roland Garros. Like at Roland Garros, I see him making quarters every year. I see him making semifinals consistently. I see him getting to a final or two, and I think he's probably going to win one or two along the way, realistically. But I don't think he's going to win a slam outside of the French Open unless he improves his non-clay court playing, unless he gets with a coach who's going to help him understand how to build points and how to change his return positioning and how to have a strategy on hard courts and on grass that takes into account the difference in the surfaces and uses some of his weapons more efficiently. And then I don't think he's going to be a top 10 guy. But to be honest with you, when I look ahead to next year, and when we've got Wawrinka coming back, we've got Djokovic coming back, hopefully we've got Murray coming back, we still have Fed up there. You know, Dimitrov is now the number 3 guy in the world. There's a lot of people clamoring for those top 5 positions. And to me, TM's not going to do enough on the non-clay surfaces to consolidate a top 5 spot. Like, he might end up in a top 5 spot, but he very well might not. A lot of it's going to depend on how other people do in their draws. You know, like, because we've got a lot of guys coming back, there's going to be some weird draws early in the year. So there's going to be some very good players that are going to lose early at the Australian Open and maybe early at the French and maybe even early at Wimbledon just because they've got incredibly tough draws because of the ranking shakeups. And that might still let him sneak into being a top 5 guy, but I don't see him being top 5 next year without making some of these changes.
Well, one of the things that really stands out to me about him is that he seems to be really, really tough, not just mentally, but physically. He has played it seems like, more tournaments over the last 4 years than anybody else in the top 20. I mean, he reminds me of Davidenko in this sense that he's just going to play all the time. Like, he's playing every week, it seems like. And, you know, he's caught some criticism for that. But what is really meaningful there for me is if he's able to play this much and stay healthy. You know, here he's finished number five. I know he's only 24. There is, of course, the chance that, you know, he breaks down, you know, over the next 2 or 3 years. But it doesn't seem like there's any reason to think that he will.
No.
Besides the fact that we're a little bit in awe of how much tennis he's actually played.
No, absolutely. I mean, when I look at the way he plays, there's nothing there that sets off alarm bells. Like, he has clean technique on every one of his strokes. He's got his forehand is good, his backhand is good, his serve is good. And even though he has a physical style, he's 24, he's takes good care of himself, like, he's strong, he's athletic. I like the way that he moves. I don't see this being a guy who's going to be injury prone. I don't see him breaking down. It's just the problem to me is he going to take time off and work on his game?
Well, no, he's not. He's going to play. He's going to play more tournaments. That's what he's shown us that he's going to do. I think he's going to continue to do that. I have him at being a top 10 guy for the next 5 years. I'm not really looking beyond that. I think that what's going to happen is that he's going to take some beatings at events that are going to eventually get to him. I think he knows deep in his heart, and over the next 2 and 3 years, he's going to know for sure, okay, Dominic Thiem has the tools physically that if he did the right things and made the right decisions and worked on his game in the right ways, he could be a threat at all the slams. I think that's going to become clear to him, but it's going to come through taking losses and getting some beatings.
Right.
Now, the issue that I see isn't that I don't think he's going to fail to adjust. I do think he will adjust. The issue is I don't think he'll adjust in time to be able to win slams outside of the clay before the next gen of players comes up and they up the ante again.
Sure.
So,
by the way, 28 tournaments this year he took part in.
Yeah.
28 tournaments.
I mean, it's...
It's a lot of tennis.
And it's winning matches. And on the clay, it's like... Again and again and again. And I really think the clay court season, it really wears him down. Like, he doesn't recover for that for a long time.
He wins a lot on the clay, so he's playing a lot of tournaments. I mean,
he's playing sometimes like 25 out of 32 days or something on the clay. Like, there's, you know, nobody's really doing that besides Rafa. But then Rafa will take 5 weeks off, and Thiem doesn't do that. So...
23, like Dimitrov played 23 tournaments in comparison. So that's five tournaments that extra that Thiem played this year to finish lower ranked. Yeah, I mean, there's a part where he's just not, he's hurting himself. And I think like the way that Federer took that time off and came back refreshed, and Nadal took that time, came back refreshed, and they both had great results and won a lot. I mean, just goes to show, I think, that scheduling can be very, very important.
Scheduling's super important.
And there's a part where you almost wonder if even Dimitrov played a little too much. I mean, it's a
well,
question,
to me, the one thing that I would say is, you know, Dimitrov had some early exits. Remember, he had some bad, I don't know about bad
middle
losses.
Of the, just middle early, of the year, yeah. What's
just
the,
early exits in the middle of the year. So he had some time where I think he felt like he wasn't getting very many matches. He certainly wasn't getting very many
Let's
games.
Put it this way. Like, the clay court season did not exactly wear Dimitrov down. So, like, if we look at, you know, so... TM's record on the clay this year, what was it, 25 and 4, right? So he played 29 clay court matches. Dimitrov played 9.
Yeah.
So there's like a 2 month period there where you know, Dimitrov played a lot less tennis, and sure, he played more tournaments. I mean, not more tournaments. I mean, he played a fair few tournaments, but yeah, he did have not a grueling clay court season. So he
felt rested, and the way that the season goes, Dimitrov is able to space out his tournaments and space out his rest
right.
a lot more than Thiem, where Thiem's really just – he's just pressing all
sure.
the time.
Sure. I mean, and if you look at the way Dimitrov finished the year versus Thiem, it speaks for itself.
The thing that I think is really going to be interesting is I think if we fast forward 3 years, Thiem probably – well, let's fast forward 5 years. I think Thiem will be playing good enough tennis that the level of tennis he will be playing 5 years from now would be good enough to win a non-clay court slam right now.
Right.
But I don't think it'll be good enough to win
in 5 years.
Exactly. Yeah. And I don't, and that's without saying who's going to be there, but the game does evolve and the game's improving.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, maybe it's going to be the miraculous Roger Federer that's still there, just whooping people's butts in his 40s. I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm joking.
But that's not likely. Also, you know, yeah. Probably. Never say never.
You know, one year at a time. But the point is that, you know, because Thiem is so reactive, he's not going to go out. He's not going to take, you know, a month or 6 months or really any amount of time off and go work on his game and really rebuild the things that he needs to do just mentally.
Sure.
He's going to do the same thing that he's been doing. It's got him to number 5 in the world.
Right.
And, you know, it might get him up to number 2 in the world one day, but it's not going to keep him as a big 4 kind of player.
But I don't see him getting up to number 2 in the world unless he really changes the way he's playing and pretty quickly. Because, like you said, I mean, I think by the time he gets it figured out, you know, there's going to be even more depth in the sport than there is right now. But, you know, you might not agree with all or anything that we just said. And either way, feel free to reach out to us and let us know.
You can hit me up on email, jacob@tacticaltennis.com. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter @tacticaltennis. And Glenn, we can email you where?
Glenn@tacticaltennis.com. And I'm on Twitter @GlennSHill, as in GlennSHill, HILL. Pretty easy. And we look forward to hearing from you folks. Also, if you liked the format, let us know about that too. You think there's something that we missed talking about that we should have? Let us know.
Have a good one, guys.
Bye-bye.